It's time to step in the green room.
Life's a garden, dig it? You make it work for you.
You see, this is the perfect music to play as I bring in Miriam Goldberger because she's my girlfriend. And Jeffrey Sweet says the same thing. Miriam Goldberger, good morning.
Good morning to you, Mike.
How are you?
I am so good.
Now, are you in the wilds of Ontario this morning?
I am not only in the wilds of Ontario. I am in the very thick of the Canada Blooms experience. I am in Toronto, and this is their big 9-day event all about flowers and gardening and landscaping. Yeah, and I've been speaking here and basically camping out here.
And notice, folks, that she says a boot, which but you're not even from there originally.
I have been living in Canada for 33 years now. I married a Canadian, but I'm from New Jersey.
I know.
Yeah.
You know, it was funny. I was in New York last Sunday in Manhattan, and my friend Alan has a place in Washington Heights. So we are right opposite the George Washington Bridge, and every time we went by it, all I could think of is the craziness going on. I mean, you know, you could look across and see Fort Lee on the other side, and all I could think of is Chris Christie and his and all that nonsense going on.
Nothing to do with that.
I didn't. Well, you got out of there 30 years ago.
That's it. He was just a babe in arms back then.
So, is it to succeed in business in Canada? Do you have to start saying aboot?
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much.
Otherwise, you're just a carpetbagger there, you know?
That's it. You know, and you have to be a little bit more laid back, and you have to be nicer. We're the kinder, gentler nation here.
Sometimes,
well,
things
have changed. Things have changed. Our leaders are not necessarily going with the same agenda that you and I would prefer.
Yeah, you know, you got those crazy conservatives there, too. And, you know, pumping all that tar sands oil into the United States, that's not doing us any favors.
That's true. But again, I had nothing to do with that.
You're growing flowers. That's a very different thing.
That's pretty much
thankfully.
It.
Thankfully.
Yeah. Yeah. Right, Lisa. And, of course, Miriam is the author of... When did this book come out, by the way?
Just a few weeks ago, Mike.
Okay, so you're still...
Congratulations.
Yeah.
Thank you.
She's enjoying the glow, basking in the glow of a new book called Taming Wildflowers. It's actually the subtitle, Bringing the Beauty and Splendor of Nature's Blooms into Your Own Backyard. First of all, congratulations. The book is lovely. And Lisa, if you want to come and grab a copy of this, because what happens on the show is that Lisa always takes a copy from me, and then she flips through it while I'm talking to the authors. And then she comes on and goes, oh, my God, that's so amazing. So we'll...
Wait for it.
Exactly. You have to wait a few minutes to wait for it. But she will be there. One of the things I've noticed right at the outset, and it's a guy who's publishing his own book right now. You've gotten high praise from some very fancy people. The blurbs. I like Pete Udolf. That's amazing. He's the guy who designed the Lurie Garden in Millennium Park here in Chicago. So,
he sure did. And he's done incredible gardens in New York and in Toronto and throughout the world. And he's a real leader in appreciating all the phases of plants and nature as a prime aesthetic element in the landscape. And he just loves wildflowers. I mean, I didn't approach him. He heard about the book through a friend of mine who is a friend of his, and he contacted me.
Wow.
yeah, that was beyond thrilling, actually.
Amazing.
Yeah.
That's great. That is so cool. By the way, our mutual friend, Annie Haven,
has posted on Facebook this morning, says that we're going wild.
Yes. Yeah.
That's okay.
She knows both of us, so I think that, you know, she can pretty well assess the situation.
So shout out to Annie out in California. Oh, and I have to tell you one more thing since you're in Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
We had a dusting of snow last night. It's a Mother Nature's way of saying, I can do this whenever I want. You know, we've had so much snow this year, we're getting close to the all-time record. And I'll talk to Rick DeMaio about that when I'm done talking to you, Miriam, but it just won't stop. I don't know what's you know, you expect that in Toronto, I imagine.
Well, Toronto has had a serious you know, whipping with the weather as well. Up where I am, my wildflower farm is about an hour and a half north of the city, and it snowed this morning again, says Canadian Hubby.
Wow. That's what we got. That's probably the same system that sort of waltzed mm-hmm. through here last night and didn't leave enough snow to really do any damage, but just enough to say, yep, I can do this anytime mm-hmm. I want.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Even I'm complaining.
I
haven't complained.
I am the last person. I am still holding out. I'm not complaining. I'm just rolling with it. I don't care.
I'm submitting your sainthood papers then.
I don't care. I just don't care.
Well, I ran out of the house without a coat yesterday, so that was my own fault because by 9 o'clock and then it was snowing. I was like, really? What an idiot I am. It's March.
Yeah, but you know what? And this is a gardening show, so the good part about all the snow is the excellent quality of snow cover. So that part is really good.
Now, we lost all of ours in Chicago, and a friend of mine posted that her crocuses are peeking out.
Yeah, it's amazing how fast. In the last couple of days, I've got shoots coming up out of
really?
The ground. Yep.
You have no right to complain whatsoever.
Well,
oh, come on.
We just had flower farm. We still have 5 feet of snow.
2 years ago, it was 85, all right, in March. For a week,
mm-hmm.
It just shows you how variable the weather can be. But nah, you know, I got a couple of little shoots coming up, but nothing to write home about yet.
It's still enviable.
Yeah, well,
say congratulations.
Yeah, I'll accept that. So you, of course, are the one of the chief cooks and bottle washers at Wildflower Farm,
mm-hmm.
Which is a place that you started in the 80s, what, 88, something like that?
That is correct.
What's interesting about your story, because you're writing about wildflowers here, but you didn't start as a wildflower venture, did you?
No, and in fact, it's really important to say right out of the gate that I am not a purist. I'm not an extremist. I don't think everyone should only grow wildflowers. My point of view and the basic premise of the book is that wildflowers should be incorporated into every single kind of garden, every single public and private landscape, because the pollinators need them and they happen to be extremely beautiful and make great cut flowers. But no, I didn't start out growing wildflowers at all. I started Canada's first pick your own flower farm back in the 80s, and I just started getting into wildflowers because I needed low maintenance perennial beds that were really for show pieces that I didn't have to, you know, do a lot of work with, and so research pre Google and pre interweb books. Remember books?
Yeah.
Indicated that wildflowers would be a good idea. So I started growing wildflowers from seed, and people started asking, well, this is a very nice garden you've got here. You know, can you landscape a garden filled with wildflowers for me? And I'd say, no, I don't do that. And then they'd say, well, can you at least sell me the plants? And I'd say, no, I don't do that. And this lasted for several years till it penetrated my thick skull that perhaps there was an opportunity here, that they know there was a demand. And so we started growing wildflowers, native grass plants, and doing wildflower landscaping. And eventually the business became what it is now, which is one of North America's largest wildflower seed suppliers. We grow. We have a 100-acre wildflower farm. It's very unpleasant and stressful. All those wildflowers, people come there to stress out, and then they go back to the city to relax. And you know, but anyways. So we have all this acreage, and we grow and we harvest and we clean and we package wildflower species, individual species, as well as genuine for real wildflower meadow mixes, not this kind of scam in the can, pretty picture on the package, doesn't really work and doesn't really contain wildflowers. We do the real deal.
Let's stop there for a second, because I'm so glad you brought that up, because I get asked about that all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you call them scam in the can?
Well, most North Americans still think that, you know, you can put on like a lovely morning coat, throw some Vivaldi on, you know, put a frilly dress on, and just sort of scatter seeds, you know, as you skip merrily outside, and that's all that there is to it. And that doesn't work at all. And most people think, when they think of meadows, they think of English meadows. I mean, if you happen to be Prince Charles, then that works for you in that environment with those weather conditions, with that type of soil, with the amount of moisture they have over there. But the wildflowers that are here, the ones that were here for tens of thousands of years before European settlement, they are not those plants, those seeds that go in those commercial meadow mixes.
What are they putting in those mixes, and why don't they work?
Well, they're putting in a lot of European annuals, and they're putting in a lot of seeds that actually are invasive aliens. And
give me some examples.
Okay, like people love Dame's Rocket.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember the Latin on it this morning, but you know, it's very pretty. And who wouldn't fall in love with it in theory? You know, it's just very pretty. But it happens to be, in certain parts of North America, actually an aggressive invasive plant.
Yeah.
And so that's just one example. And another important difference between a real meadow, and there are a couple of key ones, but another one I'll talk about is the fact that, like, in a real meadow, you just seed it once. And it lasts for 75, 100 years. The oldest man-made meadow grown from seed is actually at the University of Wisconsin Arboretum. It's the Curtis Prairie Meadow. And it's, I think, it's definitely in its eighth decade. So it's in its 80s. And it's still going strong. The maintenance, you know, is like one day a year or something like that. It's fantastic. And then another key element is that a real meadow combines wildflowers and native grasses, and that's because the wide fibrous roots of the grasses and the vertical roots of the flowers, they cinch together and they create this impenetrable web, and over time it means no weeds can get in and it holds moisture better.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a beautiful, closed, long-lived system. Not to even mention the fact that wildflowers developed over tens of thousands of years and co-evolved with all the pollinators. And that's a really key piece, is the pollinators, the ecosystems, the food web, the soil web, and what wildflowers bring to the planet in terms of the eco-services that they provide. And so when I wrote the book, my one of my goals was to bring this information to people who normally may not even know that these are important issues.
Mm-hmm.
And basically lure people in with lots and lots of very beautiful pictures.
Well, you've got a lot of great pictures here, and one of the things that Miriam does that's very cool is not overload you with too many plants, just enough. There's about 60 of your favorites there, and anybody thinks, you know, hard, they'll think, yeah, 60s, I can probably handle that number, because sometimes you get these books and there's hundreds and hundreds and you have no idea where to start. And you go with some of the more famous plants, and you even have sections on milkweed, which is very cool, and Blazing Star. And that's the other thing I have to ask, because you tend to gravitate towards common names rather than the Latin names. For instance, you call them wildflowers when really we're talking about, some people would say, native plants. Why do you use the term wildflowers?
Well, I think that my own experience with the word or words wildflowers is a good example. And when we started our business back in 1988, we called the business Wildflower Farm just because it sounded romantic. It sounded lovely. And we weren't really growing wildflowers at all. But I think that more people respond to that word, that term, than the things that are academically correct. I wanted this book to be a populist guide for all kinds of people, and a gateway to a lot of information, a lot of beauty, and that's why I have also in there all kinds of information about using wildflowers as fresh cut flowers and dried flowers, and extending wildflowers into being used as flowers for DIY wildflower weddings, for green weddings. And so there's a human interest angle to all of that. I mean, and these things that appeal to me too, as a human being. I wanted to make the book, you know, really accessible.
And to be sure, you do have the Latin names there, so you're not going to you're not hanging people out to dry by saying sunflower. No. You know, those names are there, but you don't hammer people with that. It's there for their information if they want it. By the way, Dame's Rocket is Hesperus matronalis, or matronalis, however you pronounce it.
Yep.
I'm on the National Park Service site, and if you look at it, it's this beautiful purple flower, and you know, as you said, people love that. But the National Park Service writes, "Do not purchase or plant this species." They say it in so many words.
Mm-hmm.
Individual plants can be pulled by hand if soil is moist, or dug up using a spade or shovel to loosen, and they go on and on about that. And then they have, you know, the alternatives, native alternatives that you might want to use. Some of them are in your book, like oxeye sunflower, Heliopsis helianthoids. So there's
exactly.
So,
and there is, I might add, in addition to the Latin being there, there's also something that I have seen no other wildflower book do, which is I have pictures of the seedlings.
And that's where I wanted to go.
Right on.
Yes. So, okay. So I did think that if I wanted to plant, I needed to get one of the, you know, big things full of mixed seeds and just throw it out there. But I didn't. So now I'm confused, because in the book, you clearly point out, you know, that you are actually growing from seeds. So are you transplanting? Are you growing in, you know, because I see some pictures here for some indoor things. So are you actually going out into a meadow and then putting it down, so you're not spreading seeds everywhere? You're actually doing it on purpose.
Well, this book is not really about how to grow a meadow. It is about how to grow individual plants.
Okay.
But you do have you do talk about that a little bit. You have a little bit about meadow and what you might want to accomplish in a meadow. So you even touch on that.
I do touch upon that. And then if you go to the Wildflower Farm website, which is just wildflowerfarm.com, there's a huge amount of excellent specific information on the step-by-step process to actually grow a meadow from seed. But I get into growing individual seeds, wildflower seeds. There's a whole chapter called Making Babies, and it's all about winter sowing and cold moist stratification, and, you know, which wildflowers need it and which ones don't, and how to do it. It's not hard. I mean, the whole of having wildflower plants or having wildflower gardens or meadows is not a difficult process, but it is different from traditional landscaping.
By the way, we're talking to Miriam Goldberger. She is the author of Taming Wildflowers. And you can go to my website, MikeNovak.net. Go to this week's show. You can click on the link and find out more about the book and how to purchase it. It's from St. Lin's Press. Nice, lovely hardcover book. I see now I'm starting to get geeky on you because I'm thinking, are we going to go hardcover with mine or you know, paperback? How does that work? How do you make those decisions? But you do have wonderful stuff in here, like how to plant the seeds, which is great. You even do a thing that I have never seen before in a book. Well, two things. One, that I'm sure it has been in one that has been in other books, but you talk about how to put wildflowers in a vase, because people, I think, are under the misapprehension that it doesn't work to use wildflowers in displays.
That's correct. That's correct. And this is something I've been studying for many, many years. In fact, I've done intensive workshops for the Perennial Plant Association on exactly this.
And your arrangements are just stunning. I mean, I feel like I could even do this.
Well, that's the beauty of wildflowers. They make incredible fresh arrangements. And, I mean, you can't go wrong. And that's part of what I try and teach in the DIY workshops that I do and when I was working with the brides that I did the book with.
Well, that was the other thing I was going to say. The last chapter is about weddings. Now, I'm not a big wedding guy, okay? I will admit that. But you talk about doing corsages and boutonnieres and arrangements for weddings, and I think that is going to attract some people who are going to want to pick this up and get some ideas.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, what I'm really doing is kind of a number of things simultaneously. I'm encouraging people to work with wildflowers, to grow them, to design with them, to bring them into their home, to incorporate them in the rituals of their wedding. And I'm also trying to give people permission to understand that it's not a difficult thing to do. And you kind of can't go wrong. And I love the fact that with the brides that I was working with, for example, they really got it. You know, they said, you know, now that we've gone through this process, I love knowing about all the wildflowers that I see when I go for a walk or when I go to my you know go out to the country or whatever. And these are important connections, really important connections. And I mean, wildflowers are really, they were the first flowers, and they were the only flowers for most of the time this planet has been in existence. And human beings have emotional relationships with wildflowers. And in fact, physically, we wouldn't exist without wildflowers. Wildflowers do so many important jobs, and some of them are emotional, some of them are ecological, and I really wanted to give wildflowers the attention that they deserve.
Well, before I let you go, Miriam, I have to talk about one other thing, and I mentioned it earlier today, and that is Wildflower Farm sells EcoLawn, which, and you were a sponsor on this show for a while. Mm-hmm. And I'm in the interest of transparency, one of the things you told me, and one of the reasons that you stopped advertising here, is that you said the Midwest doesn't seem to be ready for a natural lawn. Mm-hmm. And I find it kind of discouraging. And I think you're right, actually, because I look at the lack of natural lawn care providers in the Chicago area. People ask me, where can I get a natural lawn care in the area? And I say, there's not a lot. It really isn't. And I, you know, 10 years ago, I thought it was going to be an industry. It was going to just spring up and go great guns. And I think it's because people are married to their old ideas about what a lawn is, and we can't shake it. You know, I want to whoop them upside the head with a rolled up newspaper and say, you got to get out of that mindset, you know, with the chemicals and the Kentucky bluegrass and the craziness.
Yeah, you know, it's a fascinating topic, you know, in terms of the economics, the environmental issues, the social behaviors and the social pressures, and there are many different reasons why, for some reason or other, the Midwest is stodgy on this. I would have to say that more than anything, after all the years that I've been involved in this, and there are eco lawns in every single state, mm-hmm. United States, and every single province, and eco lawn is now a huge part of one of the largest, in fact, the largest hardware store chain in Canada. And more people are very familiar with it in Canada. But again, we have some fairly progressive anti-pesticide bylaws here.
Which I love. I mean, you guys have passed the laws against what we call cosmetic pesticides. And the idea of a cosmetic pesticide is you got a dandelion in the corner of your lawn and you're spraying the whole thing with 2,4-D and other. By the way, weed and feed, folks, that's just another name for poison and fertilizer. You should understand that when you're using.
Exactly. Well, see, the real reason that most North Americans are still entrenched in traditional lawn behaviors and expenses is because lawn is basically an entire marketing industry. People do not approach lawn the way they approach other products as consumers. They've been sold a huge amount of misinformation and a huge amount of behaviors that they feel they are told are necessary, which in fact are utterly bogus and are really simply designed to sell products. The quality of most lawn seed is really inferior. It's old. It's repackaged. It's filled with weeds, and the whole idea of covering seeds, you know, that they're marketing as, oh, this is actually a fertilizer. This is really good for you. All it really is a way to sell you half the quantity of seed at the same price. So you're getting half at the same price you were paying for a full bag of seed, you know, in terms of the large company that does most of this lawn marketing. And it has half the coverage. And it really doesn't have any great value as a fertilizer. And it does nothing to really enhance the organic quality of the soil. And most people are still growing very shallow-rooted, sod-style lawns.
Yep.
Whereas the eco lawn, which is seven different fine fescues, has deep roots that go down 9 to 14 inches. Fine fescues, I maintain, are the best kept secret in the lawn care and lawn seed industry because they are legitimately a godsend in terms of the way they operate. You mow them once a month. You can grow them in the sun. You can grow them in the shade. You can grow them under pine trees. They have fine blades that are easy to mow, but wonderful to walk on.
Yeah.
They don't need great quality. So it's something that that, you know, I am passionate about because it is there's so many lawns. I mean, like 80% of North America is covered in lawns.
I know, and if we're going to do that, we got to do it smarter, and we're not doing it smart right now. So, I highly recommend Eco Lawn. It's ECO-LAWN.
ECO.
ECO, rather. I know how to spell, don't I?
Yes.
Eco-Lawn. And you can go to Wildflower Farm and find out more about that. And I also highly recommend Taming Wildflowers. Miriam, wonderful book. Congratulations on that. And I hope folks will go to my site, MikeNovak.net, and find out more about the book. But you also have a website, which is tamingwildflowers.com, so you can do either. And you're speaking next week on Friday at the Chicago Flower and Garden Show.
Yes, in the afternoon at 2 o'clock. I'm very excited to be there.
So, folks, go on by. Get a book. I imagine you'll have books with you, right?
Yes, there will be books for sale.
There's a good reason to go on Friday. Miriam, wonderful talking to you. I hope we hook up the... Oh, well, yeah, we're going to see each other on Thursday.
Yes.
All right, fabulous. Thanks so much for being on the show, and I'll see you then.
Oh, thank you so much, Mike. Take care. We'll see you soon.
You bet. Bye-bye.
Bye.